Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
And away we go. Hour two is here. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I want to share an interesting article with you that I think you'll see pretty quickly what this is driving at. It's called Bees Are Fish and Other Fake Narratives. Bees, as in, you know, the kind of buzzing bees. Bees are fish and other fake narratives. This is by Andy Kessler. It's in the Wall Street Journal. And he's a writer, columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He says, a friend recently told me he asked the management at a vegan restaurant why they didn't have honey on the menu. It's from an animal, so it's not vegan, he was told. He tried to explain that honey isn't part of a bee, but instead nectar that bees carry back to a hive mixed with enzymes, heat, and dehydrate. Exasperated, he finally said, it's bee barf. And the author says, it's not, but it isn't prime rib either. He didn't win the argument. I mention this, he says, because last month a California court ruled that bumblebees are actually fish and can be protected by the California Endangered Species Act. This is as silly as the Environmental Protection Agency trying to define puddles and drainage ditches as navigable waters. Yes, they were saying that a puddle should be regulated like a lake or river. Even before this, the Army Corps of Engineers had a glancing geese test, meaning if a migratory bird ever looked at a wet spot, that spot was under federal jurisdiction. Meanwhile, we have oat milk and almond milk, even though they obviously aren't milk. Similarly, oxymoronic plant-based meat, which isn't meat, is really fake meat. Even worse, it's nasty and chock full of salt and not even good for you. Be warned, he says, we're being trained that anything can be anything. The truth has taken a back seat. In June 2020, in the middle of the coronavirus lockdowns, tens of thousands marched in American cities in protest of the police. In the protesters' defense, 1,200 health and medical professionals signed a letter in response to emerging narratives that seemed to malign demonstrations at risk for the public health because of COVID-19. It went on, this is a quote from the document, we wanted to present a narrative that prioritizes opposition to racism as vital to the public health, including the epidemic response. He says, ah, the narrative. How have the signers not been summarily fired and barred from the healthcare industry? We know why. If a bee is a fish, then protests provide immunity. You may be saying, what? What is he talking about? What he's saying is these very same healthcare people, physicians, nurses, other professionals in the healthcare industry, the medical industry, they were telling us all the live long day, you got to wear a mask. You got to socially distance. You can't get anywhere closer than 6 feet to anyone else. You really shouldn't be out anyway. You shouldn't be going to the restaurants. You shouldn't be doing all this other stuff. Remember all that? And yet it was the same people who made what I think any average thinking person would recognize as an inconsistent decision to give a pass to all the people who are marching in the streets without masks, cheek by jowl, not socially distancing from each other, super spreading events, as they were called. And in that case, it was okay. On the one hand, remember how they were just battering you into submission on social distancing and masks, etc. But yet when it came to, I mean, like if you wanted to go out to eat with your family, you were evil. But if they wanted to march in the streets and demonstrate for, say, Black Lives Matters, that was okay. That's what he's referring to here. I won't overexplain it. He says, this is the world we live in today. Who actually believes this stuff? George Orwell said it best in his 1945 Notes on Nationalism. Quote, one has to belong to the intelligentsia to believe things like that. No ordinary man could be such a fool. And he says, Bertrand Russell, a famous British atheist, had a similarly great line. This is one of those views which are so absurd that only very learned men could possibly adopt them. He says, and this is the author speaking, it wasn't only protests. I spent the week after Memorial Day 2020 flipping between CNN and Fox News I watched Chicago Lake Liquors in Minneapolis repeatedly looted. Even the safe was dragged out. I watched rioters throw rocks at police protecting the White House behind flimsy fences. I watched cars on fire in Manhattan and luxury stores with smashed windows and a line of looters stealing goods. In August of 2020, CNN famously called protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin, quote-unquote, mostly peaceful, as flames from riots raged behind the reporter. Even my own lying eyes could see it. I must not be part of the learned intelligentsia who believe that if a puddle is a river, then riots are peaceful. There's a reason for all this. According to Nicole Hannah-Jones, the leading voice behind the New York Times, factually challenged so-called 1619 Project, awarded the Freedom of Speech Award by the Roosevelt Institute, her acceptance speech noted that, quote, the narrative allows for policy. As a presidential candidate, Pete Buttigieg was even more blunt, gracing the May 13, 2019 cover of Time with his husband. Mr. Buttigieg admitted that, quote, the narrative is policy, and narrative is how you get people to embrace the policies you're putting forward. He's right about that. Remember the infrastructure bill full of social programs? 17 Nobel Prize-winning economists, their names are here, wrote a letter in September 2021 insisting that government spending, quote, will ease longer-term inflationary pressures. Uh-huh. He says, I remembered that as I filled my car with $6.99 a gallon gas last week. Maybe the intent is to change the subject. Last week, President Biden told Californians, I'm doing everything in my power to blunt Putin's price hike and bring down the cost of gas and food. Never mind that prices were already rising before Russia invaded Ukraine. Mr. Biden also told the United Nations COP26 climate conference in November that climate change, quote, is an existential threat to human existence as we know it. The author says, really? Never trust those pushing narratives that conflict with the truth. He says, for example, another example, rather, a New York Times columnist last week, speaking of the January 6th committee, wrote, quote, most political theater is tedious and partisan, cheap meat for a hungry base. But there are times when these theatrics can serve a real purpose for the public at large. To paraphrase his thoughts, spectacles are useful, whether they are true or not. Anyone arguing his point will be flagged on social media for misinformation. We are so used to this nonsense, he says, that it rolls off our backs. Cuba, Libya, China, and Venezuela all sit on the UN Human Rights Council. This is considered normal. We sigh, shrug our shoulders, and move on. In the culture wars, I'm okay with anyone identifying as anything as long as they don't take advantage of the system. Elizabeth Warren, are you listening? But in March, a nominee for Supreme Court Justice refused to answer the question, can you provide a definition for the word woman? Insisting, I'm not a biologist. A woman named Kelly J. Keene in the Stansford University of Pennsylvania women's swimming meet stated that 6'4" Leah Thomas wasn't a woman and was taking advantage of the system. Another spectator pushed back and asked, are you a biologist? Which now seems to be the established talking point. I'll spare you the rest of the exchange, but it ended with this zinger from Miss Keene. Do you rely on stupid arguments because you don't have an argument? Narratives affect our lives, and they aren't harmless. Look at the effort to promote and subsequent backfiring of the alphabet soup, ESG, CRT, MMT, BTC, and on and on. You may not recognize all of those acronyms. Advocates use stupid arguments. Carbon spewing, everyone's racist, free money, because they don't have real arguments. Maybe sanity is returning, he says. Last week, the Non-Human Rights Project, which has been trying to establish legal personhood for great apes, elephants, dolphins, and whales, including Happy the Elephant at the Bronx Zoo, was rebuffed in a 5-2 decision by the New York State of Court Appeals. For now, an elephant is an elephant, not a person, though elephants are clearly smarter than the two dissenting New York State judges and the humans at the Non-Human Rights Project. A bee is a fish, a puddle is a river, protests cure pandemics, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. Beware of manipulative narratives. We'll get that posted for you as well. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Andrew in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Andrew. Hello, Andrew.
Hello there.
I guess Andrew's not ready. All right. Well, let's try E-Frank.
Everything's under control. Situation normal. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Yeah. Thank you. How are you?
I am well, thank you. But you weren't supposed to ask. Let's go to E-Frank in Astoria, New York. Good morning, E-Frank.
Yes, good morning, Patrick. I have a question that I wish to present to you. Perhaps maybe it's a little bit technical because it involves the cardinals in the Vatican. When something goes wrong in the Vatican in regards to the Pope's state of mind and his ability to function as the head vicar of the Catholic faith, I want to ask you, Patrick, is it possible that the College of Cardinals have the ability to create a vote to excommunicate the Pope if the Pope is doing acts of morbidity or corruption? Because I've only heard of Joseph Ratzinger deciding to resign and then placing his resignation being Pope Emeritus. And that happened in several centuries. So can you explain how the College of Cardinals, if they find out that the Pope is involved in something that is not suitable for his duties, how they can actually vote the Pope out of his position?
Yeah, I can answer that pretty quickly. They don't have any such power. So no matter what any given pope might do in his personal life, or even if it's something that affects the church, the College of Cardinals has no authority to, quote-unquote, vote him out. That's not part of the church's teaching. It's not part of the church's law on this issue. Now, I would encourage you, E-Frank, to take the long view of history and to consider the fact that over the last 2,000 years, we've had 265 popes, I believe it is, and most of them have been, at the very least, you know, decent, good men trying to do their job as well as they could. Some of them have been great saints, and some, relatively few, but there have been a number, who were absolute scoundrels, who were fathering illegitimate children and selling ecclesiastical offices and murdering people and getting into who knows what kinds of sexual trouble on the side. So far, far, far more spectacular things that popes have done. Thankfully, not in too great of numbers. And the church is still here. The church under the control of Jesus. Jesus says, I am with you always, even until the end of the world. So my advice would be, I don't see any benefit for you personally, nor for me, to be in consternation or angry. I don't know if you're angry. I'm just assuming it's possible. But to be in turmoil in some way over what may or may not be happening in the church. Because first of all, there's nothing you or I can do about it in any case. And all the people who are, you know, in their cottage industries of making videos and writing pamphlets and blog posts and things, that's not going to change anything. The Lord is permitting his church to continue in time. And sometimes it looks very difficult or problematic to us, and maybe it is. But maybe it's not everything it appears to be also. So my advice would be, rather than worry about such things, I would just be trusting in Jesus and say, Lord, this is your church. And I'm along for the ride. You know, it's not my job to sort out if a pope is doing something bad or good. I can have my opinions on it. I'm free to have my opinions. And I can deplore some things or be happy about some things and pray accordingly. But ultimately, it robs you of your spiritual vitality if you are consumed by these things that you have no control over whatsoever. So that's the view I try to take on this, E-Frank.
Well, I'm not angry. I'm just a little bit puzzled that at one time, you know, Pope Benedict XVI was voted by the conclave. He came from the Benedictine order.
No, he didn't.
Pope Francis first took on a name as
yeah,
the first Francis, from St. Francis of Assisi, and
he did it. Let's stop right there. He did not come from the Benedictine order, Frank, E. Frank. He was a diocesan priest in Germany. He was not a religious order priest. So not that that matters, you know, one way or the other, unless you're talking about the prophecies of St. Malachi, because there is a tie-in there. It appears to be a tie-in with the Benedictine order because of the olive branch that's mentioned, or the olive is mentioned there. But in any case, all of those things don't add up to really anything. Pope Benedict XVI, he publicly announced his resignation, and he has consistently said that he has resigned and he's no longer the Pope, and he doesn't exercise either the ministry or the office. And so I know that there are many arguments to the contrary, people trying as hard as they possibly can to prove that either Benedict is still the Pope, or maybe if he did resign, at least Pope Francis is not the true Pope. I don't buy into those theories. In fact, one of them was soundly refuted by Dr. Edward Faser. He is a philosopher at Pasadena City College. I think you would do well to read his refutation of this notion that Pope Benedict XVI is still actually the valid Pope. He takes it point by point, and with an exacto knife of logic and facts, he just shows that is an untenable position. So notwithstanding the sincerity and the goodwill maybe of the people who hold that view, I'm not knocking anybody who holds that view, but I don't believe it's a defensible position. And so if you haven't been acquainted with Edward Faser's response to that, I think it would be worth your time to read it.
Well, you know, my new girlfriend is a Quaker Shaker, and she says that I must renounce that belief. She believes that Reverend Minister and the titles of, like, His Eminence and Most Reverend are irrelevant to the relationship that we have. So that's why I'm having problems, Patrick.
A Quaker Shaker, that's a new combination. I haven't heard. So she comes from a Shaker background. There are not too many Shakers left. And the Quaker background?
Yes, she's actually a Quaker from a Meeting Friends Quaker house here in Queens. And she was in my second grade class. She left her high school and graduated from my Catholic high school. She did all these things that didn't make sense, and she also went to my college. So she's always telling me to renounce the belief of the Pope if she wants me to, if she wants to have some sort of a matrimonial bond with her.
Right. Well, that to me would be highly problematic, E. Frank. If I were in your situation, I could easily understand why you'd want to settle down with the woman of your dreams. You know, whatever God's will is for you. But in the meantime, I would look for some red flags. And that, for me, would be a big red flag. If the woman of my dreams was telling me that I had to, you know, abandon my Catholic faith and reject the church's mission on earth, that would be a real red flag for me. So I offer you that for your consideration. Thank you, E. Frank. Always interesting to talk to you. 888-914-9149. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. We have a line that's open right now. You can get it if you call 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code PATRICK for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to catholichealthshare.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Interesting. Who's this? Sounds like One Way or Another by Blondie, but I know it's not.
Wellness High and Dry.
What?
Wellness High and Dry. Yeah.
Never heard of him. I kind of like it, though.
To be honest, Cyrus had this on his playlist, so I was like, okay, we're going to try it, Cyrus. Remembering him, you know?
Oh, Cyrus. People are worried about Cyrus. Cyrus is fine. He's getting tanned, rested, and ready. Spending a lot of time at the pool, from what I understand. All right, let's go back to the phones. The number is 888-914-9149. Let's go to Nathan now in Tempe, Arizona. Hello, Nathan.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome.
Good morning. So I don't know if you remember, you got a call. I called into your show. I'm a big fan of your show, by the way. I called in from Edina, Minnesota, last November or something. Maybe you remember a guy calling asking you advice on how to break up with his girlfriend because he believed he needed to apply to seminary and follow the call of God.
I kind of do. Are you that guy?
I am that guy. I am that guy. And I'm calling to sort of just let you know full circle that last week I was accepted to St. John Vianney's Theological Seminary in Denver, Colorado.
Wonderful.
I flew back to Arizona. I followed your advice, which I thought was very helpful. And generally your advice is actually pretty helpful, Patrick. So I flew back down and I started the application process praying. Last November is when I flew back down to Arizona.
Okay.
And
going through
all the interviews.
Are you from Arizona?
I am. Yep. I'm born and raised in Glendale, Arizona.
Okay.
So I went through the whole process and I just wanted to let you know, that it's, I'm all the way through. And thank you for your prayers too. And the prayers of all your listeners who may have heard and for your advice.
So tell me, sorry, but I didn't mean to interrupt you, Nathan. You're most welcome for the prayers. I'm sure many people are praying for you as evidenced by, you know, how things are turning out. So if you don't mind me asking, and if it's too personal, then say no, but can you talk a little bit about what it was like for you when you had to deliver that message to this young woman that you were looking at the priesthood?
I can. So, like with most things that are like this, and I don't know, maybe my experience can help someone else who's listening too, but, I have nothing but respect, you know, and really love for my ex-girlfriend, you know, nothing but respect for her. I don't, you know, but, like with most things like this, you know, you can think about it and maybe talk about it and it's like, oh yeah, it might not be so hard, but basically what I'm saying is, it was harder for her and I guess for both of us when, you know, when push came to shove than it seemed to be, you know. Mm-hmm. It was, but you know, I felt so free, really. I felt this tremendous peace. Literally, it felt like the best way I can describe it really is a peace that surpassed understanding. Mm-hmm. It was like God was asking me to step out to him, but he was calling to me from the top of a cliff and I was just looking out into like this fog, but I knew that he was calling me out there.
Yeah.
And he was just inviting me to trust him. And it felt like, Pat, it felt like I stepped out over this cliff. I finally like took a step. And it was like time froze, you know, right in that moment when I told her. And then interiorly, it was the sense that really, like, God caught me. It was crazy, Patrick. It was so crazy. Mm. Just the sense of peace interiorly, you know, which was tough because it was like, wow, you know, it's such a sad moment. And, you know, it's like, wow, yeah. I wish she could really see the peace that God gave me. And also to know that I was, you know, being honest with her and all that, but. It was really momentous interiorly. It was really quite confirming of God's love,
that's,
you know,
beautiful.
And his care.
That's beautiful. And it goes to the issue of your trusting in God, where he says, you know, like calling to St. Peter to get out of the fishing boat, something that he wouldn't otherwise do. You can't walk on water, but Jesus says, come. And he did, as you know, and then he was able to walk on water because of Jesus supporting him. So I'm really happy for you, Nathan. And, you know, in a bittersweet sort of way, I'm sorry for your girlfriend or your former girlfriend, but hopefully your good example to her of trusting God and being willing to do something that would be painful or difficult, that will be edifying for her and pay dividends in her life.
I hope so too. And yeah, that's a perfect analogy for it too, you know, stepping out into the water. Mm-hmm. And for anyone listening who's thinking about it, there was an old church lady, as we all know, and we really do love them, but an old Italian woman named Toni at my old parish who she used to tell me growing up that if God's calling you to the priesthood or to the religious life, and this goes for women discerning too, she would always tell me, you know, it's like, you might go around and around and around and around, but as long as if you're faithful to him, then he'll get you there. And, you know, I really didn't, I mean, I wasn't sure what those words were supposed to mean to me back then, but, they sure hold true now. So, thank
great.
You. And, please continue to pray for us, all of us seminarians, and we need
we
your prayers,
will.
But we thank you too. So Thanks a lot, Patrick. I'm a huge fan of your show. We listen every day.
Thanks,
my coworkers,
Nathan.
And I. It's crazy, but yep. And you're always welcome back in Arizona anytime you want to come down here.
Well, I'm glad to know that. I'm glad I haven't been barred from admittance. I love Arizona, but I tell you what, I love it in January, February, March, not so much in June, July, August, if you get my drift.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, thanks for rubbing it in, Patrick. Thanks for reminding us.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, Nathan. Happy to help. Thank you for that. Yes. Before I go in, and thank you, Nathan, Godspeed to you. Nathan's story reminds me of another situation that I was witness to going back years and years ago. But there was a similar but different situation that kind of went in the opposite direction. And there was a young woman who was one of my students and just a truly wonderful, good person, genuinely a good person. Have you ever met somebody like that where you can just see this person is really good at heart? People who radiate that kind of goodness is, I don't know, very edifying, I think. So she had confided in me her own, maybe intuitions might be the right word for it, or some twinges, some stirrings in her soul that she thought perhaps religious life might be what God was calling her to. And she wasn't sure. And so from time to time, when we would touch base and kind of catch up, and she would share, like, you know, here's the latest thing. And I remember one particular conversation that we had, and she shared that she had gone on a vocations retreat weekend at the convent of a wonderful group of religious sisters. You know, you can't imagine any better group. And she said when she was there that she experienced some real, and I'm trying to remember the word that she used. I'm not sure if I can remember it, but I'll put it in my own words. She was really unsettled and very, just unsettled. It was not what she was hoping for, that it would be peaceful and she would have a sense of this is where God is leading me. She just felt very deeply unsettled to the point even of tears. And so I remember in our conversation, I said, well, you should listen to that. You should pay attention to that, because if you're seeing a pattern in every time when you're going to one of these retreats to kind of see, test the waters and see if maybe religious life is for you, if the Lord is calling you, doors will open and you will feel at peace. And it may not happen all at once, but it'll happen. But at the same time, if you feel this sense of a lack of peace or being unsettled, being in some kind of, you know, spiritual turmoil, listen to that too, because that could easily be God trying to show you in this way that that is not the route that he wants you to go down. It's not foolproof, but there's some really important things to look for that, generally speaking, will guide you in the right direction. Well, long story short, I mean, she was a woman of great prayer, and she did that, and she pondered that, and as it turns out, religious life wasn't for her. And it was God doing this in her life. God, I believe, showing her that she should give him the first shot, so to speak, the first chance, the first opportunity to speak to her as to whether or not he might want her to be in religious life. And she did. God bless her. She did that. And God showed her, I think very clearly from what she told me, that that was not where she was supposed to go. But it took some time. It took a while before she got to that sense of certitude. And what happened? Well, she met a wonderful man, and she's now very happily married. They have several children. They're, you know, just an exemplary personification of happy, holy Christian marriage that is fruitful, because babies are coming into the world. And I've never forgotten that conversation from many years ago, because I don't know if anyone else maybe had mentioned that to her, but I'd like to think that by talking about this issue and saying, pay attention to those red flags, or at least pay attention to what seemed to be signs from God, and very often it will guide you in the right way. And thankfully it did that with her. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Andrew in Austin. Good morning, Andrew. Welcome.
Good morning. I wanted to weigh in a little bit on your comment earlier about, you know, bees or fish and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
I think that what we're seeing now is sort of a backlash to that building for many years. You know, I think to all of the different things that we're seeing that are what I would call fall into that category of like beyond unreasonable, but like silly. You know, puddles are navigable, bees are fish.
Yeah. Men can get pregnant.
I mean, I think
women can be men.
Men can get pregnant. I think back to the time you were talking about, you know, 2020 and in June 2020, and I remember the protests and that being supported by the CDC and saying, well, you know, responding to racism is more important than social distancing. And yet by the same point, we were told, but you can't go to church. Don't go to church.
You're not allowed to go visit your dying mother who's stuck alone in a rest home, and the priest can't go in there and give her the last sacraments. I know exactly what you're talking about.
But yet we can protest, I think what we're seeing in sort of in the electorate, right, is that half of the country is saying, you know what, we've kind of had it with this stupid stuff. And so, you know, this is why we have this sort of big dichotomy right now that we're seeing in the country. And so the response of the intelligentsia is, oh, those deplorables, they're all rubes. They're country bumpkins. Mm-hmm. They go to church and stupid things like that. You know, you can't
in
really
flyover country.
Them. They don't know what's best, right. You know. Yeah, in the flyover country, exactly. And, you know, I think I'm just in the same category as most what I'll call just sort of average Joe, average Jane. That says, yeah, but you know, when you start, I'm all for social justice, and I'm all for doing the right thing, and I'm all for being tolerant and all of that. But, you know, be tolerant with me too, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that somebody who's got a Y chromosome is a guy, you know, and somebody who's got two X's is a girl. And, you know, that kind of is biology, and it is science. So I'm following the science, you know?
Right.
And I don't know. I just, it's well, very, very
here's
frustrating,
my take on
I think,
it.
For the average person.
It's okay for you. In fact, it's demanded that you follow science in some ways, but not in others. So if it's a matter of, let's say, climate change, absolutely follow the science. If it's a matter of epidemiology and masking and social distancing, absolutely follow the science. But if you dare to say what you just said, like, you know, men and women are different and women can't become men and vice versa, that kind of science, how dare you? And how dare you invoke science when you're trampling on people's feelings, you hater? You see how quickly the rules change when you invoke science for something that's decided by the left, how it's going to be, science be damned.
Well, and I think that's part of what, you know, what I used to call, like when we were kids, we used to call the difference between being book smart and street smart, right? Between having common sense or having book smarts. And that's not to say, you know, having book smarts is bad. I'm a lawyer. I've been to law school. What it means to be book smart. But you got to have common sense too. And bees aren't fish. I'm sorry. You know, and
that's true.
Men aren't women. I mean, you know, that whole Leah Thomas or whatever her name is, the swimmer from UPenn, that just makes my blood boil. I don't know if you were watching the U.S. Open this weekend, but a lot of the commercials were about Title IX. And I'm like, well, wait, we should just do away with Title IX because now men can compete against women and crush them.
Mm-hmm.
For 50 years, we used to raise awareness to women in sports. And now, never mind.
Well, you know, Title IX, the verbiage was modified, and also the interpretation of the verbiage was modified so that sex no longer means male or female. Now it means now the word sex is open to the issue of gender identity, which can be anything. It can be anything you want. And it can change hour by hour or day by day. And everybody must accept it. So you're right about the Title IX and the financial stranglehold that the federal government in its ideological way has on schools, because it will defund them if they don't go along. And this is a form of well, it's forced indoctrination at the point, not of a bayonet, but at the point of a check, because the schools are not going to get the funds if they don't go along with the insanity, like letting boys in the girls' shower room or play on the girls' team or what have you. And so people, I think, Andrew, that a lot of this is driven by the desire to be properly funded And if you realize that your funding will get cut off, or if it's threatened that your funding will get cut off, or you yourself will be ejected from your position, and somebody else who's willing to take the crazy pill will be happy to take your place. A lot of people, they just toe the line because they don't want to suffer the consequences. And consequently, it just gets worse and worse when you have more and more and more people buying into this thing that they don't even really believe anyway, but they realize that they have to go along to get along. Otherwise, they'll get the chop.
Yeah, I'm not so sure they don't believe it anyway, but I guess we don't really know what's in their hearts. But
yeah, I think, you know, maybe I'm just overly optimistic. My impression, Andrew, is that, sure, you've got some of the people who are truly deluded. They really have fully gone over to the dark side and they believe it. But I think most people are not that far gone. And I think they realize the rules of the game, and they realize that they want to have, you know, a house and a car and a job, and they want the things that most people want. And they realize that in order to have those things and to be left unmolested by the Twitter mob and others, they just have to go along to get along, and they just keep their heads down.
But isn't that sad? I mean, yeah, you have to abandon what you really believe to espouse what you think you're supposed to believe.
Yeah, it is sad. Truly sad. You know who I feel the saddest for, Andrew? And I appreciate your phone call. We have to take a break. I feel the sad, well, maybe not the saddest, but I feel very sad for our teachers and people who are working within, let's say, the public school system at any level. The teachers, the administrators, the counselors, the coaches, people who are in that world where this indoctrination is in overdrive right now. And they want to do something to help, but they know if they do, they're going to get stomped on immediately and very likely lose their job and their livelihood. I mean, the pressures that some of these people are going through is unbelievable. And the same in the medical field as well. Doctors, physicians, nurses, I feel your pain. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio. Don't you listen to what the
man says. It's a great song. Young Thomas, acquaint yourself with Paul McCartney's music and you will be better for it. Let's see. This is a note that just came in from Gene, who's listening in our Philadelphia station area, 640 AM. And Gene says, "Hi, Patrick. Love your show. You have taught me so much. My thought on the high number of annulments may be by people like me who were Catholic in name only, who went through all the motions but had no idea of the faith or the meaning of marriage in the eyes of God. I've never gone through the annulment process, but would guess it wasn't valid." I believe she's referring to her own marriage. But I would guess that it wasn't valid since I wasn't following any church teaching at the time. I feel my generation received a lot of watered-down Catholicism, and maybe that has something to do with the high numbers. Just a thought. Well, I think you are quite correct, Gene. And although I don't know if that accounts for the vast majority of the declarations of nullity that the church in the United States seems to be giving, I wouldn't be at all surprised that it doesn't account for a high percentage of them. You know, that it's not at least some significant number of people who, because they never received the faith in any meaningful way, they just didn't know. So let me give an example. Now, this may not describe your situation, Gene, but it certainly describes the situation of other people who, just when they grew up in the era of felt banners and guitars and happy clappy and not a whole lot else, they never really learned that, for example, that marriage is ordered toward procreation. And that the primary end of marriage, the primary goal of marriage, is procreation. It's not the only goal, it's not the only end, but that's the primary end. That's the means by which God keeps people on this planet, is through marriage and procreation. So if you, and I don't mean you personally, but if you rhetorically grew up in a vacuous environment where you all you got was a little bit of happy clappy and some felt banners and you never really learned anything, and you went into what you thought would be a valid marriage not planning to have any children, maybe you were on the pill, you know, maybe there was some other means by which you and your husband determined that you weren't going to have any children. Could even have been like tubal ligation or a vasectomy, for example. Well, those would be impediments to a valid marriage, but impediments that you aren't even aware of because nobody ever told you, nobody ever taught you. Now, that's just one example. The caller earlier today, he brought up the issue of gross immaturity. Now, there are certain terms that the canon lawyers will use, and the main thing is that they can say, was the person, was the man or the woman, or even both for that matter, did they suffer from a lack of freedom? Was there some coercion? Was there a third party? You better marry my daughter. I remember when I was younger, I mean, a whole lot younger, like a teenager younger, I always thought that the term shotgun wedding meant that the wedding happened quickly. Like, uh-oh, she's pregnant. We better get married. So they get married really quickly. I always thought for some reason that's what a shotgun wedding meant. That's not what a shotgun wedding means. A shotgun wedding means it's the figurative, the father's holding a shotgun aimed at the man saying, you better marry my daughter. You got her in a family way. Therefore, you have to marry her. I didn't make that connection until I was probably in high school. That would be an example, even, of course, if there was no actual gun, that would be an example of an impediment. Because if the guy is feeling pressure from the father, even though he was irresponsible and he got this girl pregnant, and that's a bad thing, obviously, but if he married her or she married him or vice versa, because of the parental pressure, you have to get married. You can't bring shame upon this family. You got to get married. You got to get married. That would be an impediment. Because one of the requirements for a valid marriage is freedom. You have to be free to enter into the marriage contract. You have to freely give your consent in the marriage contract. And if you're not free because you're compelled, or there's the fear or the threat of violence in some way, that's a clear impediment. But it's the case that there are many people who never knew that. Just like Eugene, I mean, like you weren't practicing the faith at all. You didn't receive the Catholic faith much at all. You said that it was kind of a watered-down version. I could easily understand what you're referring to. So this is an important point that you're bringing up, and that is it has a lot to do with why the marriage tribunals in this country, and I'm familiar with this country's situation more or less. I don't really claim any knowledge of what's going on in the rest of the world, but I think I can at least observe what's happening in this country. And yeah, the number of declarations of nullity are through the roof, and they have been for many years, through the roof. But Gene's got a very important point here. Why do you think that's happening? Because if you grew up at a time and you never really learned the faith, or you were dealing with immaturity and you brought that to the table, and it would have to be a kind of radical form of immaturity, a radical narcissism, for example. A lot of narcissistic people, you know, by the way, you know one thing? One of the hallmarks of narcissistic people is they quickly try to blame other people around them as narcissistic. They call that projection, from what I understand. But in any case, yes, Gene. So the world that you grew up in and the relative emptiness and lack of content that you received, to the extent you received any of it, is a direct contributing factor. So for people who are up in arms and angry and resentful about, well, why is the church granting so many annulments? Well, part of the reason is because they're actually invalid marriages, whether we like it or not. And it's better for the church to say that marriage was not valid. And here's why. Here are the reasons why. As Jesus said, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. So I'm not advocating by any stretch for people to be seeking freedom from their marriages. Not at all. The goal, of course, is to stay married until death do us part, obviously. But for those people who, because of the way they were raised, lack of education, compulsion, fear, what have you, and they find themselves in a marriage that just didn't go the way they thought it would, it's better to know the truth about that situation than not know it. And that's the role of the church's annulment process, quite simply. Thank you, Gene. Appreciate that. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to, let's see. Let's go to Dave in Miami. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Patrick. First time listener.
Thank you.
I love what I hear so far. I just wanted to add on to the last caller. I just want to add some comments to the last caller. Okay. A little background about me. I came from a mixed marriage, meaning that my wife is black and I'm Caucasian. So okay. With the whole thing about acceptance, I just want to add, you know, that we don't have to like something. We just have to accept it, you know, and, you know, it may not be the way he believes that the men should be men, women should be women, but this is the world we live in now. This yeah. is not 40 years ago. This is not our parents' generation that, you know, you don't like something, you could go do something about it. You just, you know, you have to just bite your tongue.
Well, let me ask you a question, Dave. Can I play devil's advocate? Because yes, I think you're onto a really good point. A really good point.
Right, go ahead, sir. Yes,
so let's turn it around. Let's flip it around and let's say that this was not, let's say this is 1855. And slavery is the law of the land in the South. And it's not really one way or the other in the North. I mean, the Northern states don't have slaves by law, but they don't, a lot of people, they don't really care. I mean, slaves, okay, whatever. They don't, it's not really a big issue for them. But there's this small group of agitators known as the abolitionists, and they don't like slavery, and rightly so. Now, if we apply this logic, and this is what I'd be curious to know how you would apply the logic. Help me out here. The logic of saying, well, this is the way things are now, the craziness, the insanity that we're experiencing right now, and I understand the temptation to just basically buckle down and keep your head down and not really say anything and not buck the system. But what about in a situation like that where the whole system was rigged to keep black people oppressed and enslaved? Didn't it really require those exceptional few, the minority, to stand up and say, we don't accept this craziness and we're going to try to do something about it? I mean, they come to my mind as I'm thinking about what you're saying.
I do believe, you know, that everyone should be free and everyone should have their own opinion. I'm going to school for psychology, so for me, it's like, you know, we could go around the circle the whole entire time. But for me, it's like, you know, I believe that people should be free. People should have their own opinion, no matter what the consequences are. But, you know,
well, what about slavery? I mean, there are a lot of people who are slave owners. I mean, I'd be opposing them, wouldn't you?
I would, of course, I would. You know, my kids do go through discrimination themselves, but it's like, you know, they know how to grin and bear it. You know, it's tough. You know, you want to go out there and fight, and you know, and fight for what you believe in. But sometimes you can't do that. You know, but for me, it's like I believe in the march for freedom. I believe in everything that the Civil Rights Act, you know, entails. But that's just who I am. You know, I don't see color. I was in the military. So for me, it's like, you know, I could fight against you if you're yellow, blue, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, if what you feel in your heart.
I get it. I guess what I'm saying is I look at someone like Martin Luther King, you know, who said, I'm not going to just go along to get along. I'm not just going to accept the crazy. I'm going to try to fight against it. And he did. I mean, he was an imperfect man, no doubt about that, but I believe he was heroic in the sense that he put his life on the line to stand up to a system that was rigged against him and so many other people.
But we live in a world something of racism now that no one wants to open their mouth, so that's the problem we have now.
Yeah.
You know, face the consequences. If you feel strong about something, you face to face the consequences. We had a black president, and people are still talking about race. Come on, really? You know... He did great things, but if he would have done something bad, it would have automatically went back on race. It's a double-edged sword, just like you said.
Yeah. My sense, Dave, tell me what you think, but my sense is that the political left wants the racial pot to keep boiling forever because that's a way they can harness emotions and turn those into votes to help them consolidate their power. It's also a way to keep, if you can keep people off balance, if you can keep them angry, you can control them. Because you can direct their energies in the ways you want them to go. So it seems to me the last thing that the left wants is racial harmony and peace. What they want is more of the same, because the more of the same they can have, the more they can control those people who are not particularly clear-headed on what's really going on, if you ask me.
Well, a lot of people are just followers. That's what I see. They're just followers. They don't want to leave their own path. So it's like, you know, whatever you believe in, I'm going to believe in, because, you know, I'm too weak to have my own opinions. Mm-hmm. That's the way I see it. That's why Trump got elected. Trump has a big mouth. He's a propagandist. So it's like, you know, we have to elect Trump. You know, he has a big mouth. He's promising the world. You know, he's promising putting this wall up. So when it didn't happen, people never had any negative feedback about it.
Remember all those free cell phones that Barack Obama was promising? All that free stuff that never materialized? One of the things that I found true, Dave, about politicians in general, this may not be true of every single one of them, but most of them, they'll promise you anything they think they can promise you if they can get your vote, and then they leave you in the dust afterward. Promises, promises.
That goes back to the beginning of time.
Yes, it does.
They give half and half, and then it's like, you know, when they don't deliver, you know, they'll be kicked out of office, or, you know, God forbid, an assassination or something else happens. It's like, you
God
know,
forbid.
You can't win.
Yeah. God forbid.
Once you if people are so brave, you know, run for public office. It's like, this is another perfect example, Patrick. Now I'll let you go. I'm sorry I keep you online long.
No, it's good. I'm glad you called.
When a sports team does well, like, for example, you're a Yankee fan, for example. I'm just throwing that out there.
Uh-huh.
If a team does well, like, well, we did well today. You don't own the team. There's no we there. I'm sorry. Right. That's not the way it works. We did well today. Well, I'm not getting a cut of that admission fee. I'm not getting anything.
Right.
That's all it is. All right, Pat. Have a good day. Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Hey, really well done for a first-time caller and a first-time listener. You're off to a great start, Dave. I hope I can keep you in the corral forever. I'll be right back. Hour 3 is going to start in a second, and we have more of your phone calls and your emails. One that just came in from a teacher reacting to something I said about teachers. I'll tell you what she said right after this.